This episode of Bright Hearth is brought to you by Backwards Planning Financial with Joe Garrisey, Rooted Pines Homestead, Indigo Sundry Soap Company, Gray Toad Tallow, and by our supporters at patreon.com.
All that we do as wives and mothers shapes others. How we do what we do also shapes others. Such is the responsibility and vocation of a homemaker. Homemaking, as Edith Schaefer reminds us, is an art. It's not merely a set of tasks, it's a vocation. It's a discipline, but a creative one. If homemaking is making a home, particularly as a pleasant place in which to live, as the dictionary says, then our first duty as homemakers is not to find the perfect schedule for chores, but to be pleasant ourselves. What will make home more pleasant than having a cheerfully bustling wife and mother at its core? Of course, the floor should be scrubbed, the sheets washed, and the meals prepared. These are the works keeping our hands busy. But what makes us homemakers is our orientation and demeanor, not our tasks alone. Excerpt from Simplified Organization by Misty Winkler.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bright Hearth. Hope that you are all doing well. How are you doing tonight, babe?
Good.
You look cheerful over there.
Do I?
Yeah, now that we've rearranged our house and we're in this, we moved rooms in our house, and now I've got this like throne in the corner of the room that I can just record and behold Lexi from afar. You know, people who leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts, which by the way, you should, if you haven't already left us a 5-star review, they really love how much I flirt with Lexi on the show. They totally don't leave us 1-star reviews saying we didn't need another podcast listening to somebody flirt with his wife, but... You know what? I think the world needs it. I don't know. Apparently it bothers some people. I'm sick. Sorry if you hear me coughing through the show. And Ray is good, but he's not a magician, so he can't get all the coughs out in the editing process. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed that quote from our friend Misty Winkler and her book there in the cold open. Lexi, you've finished that whole book now?
I haven't finished the book itself.
Okay.
But I've consumed pretty much every other content she's ever put out.
Yeah, so it's a great book. You guys should definitely pick it up. And we're going to be talking today about something very much that quote got to the heart of, which is the mother's attitude as one of the key components to making the home a beautiful place. Because this season, as we introduced last episode, we're going to be talking about building households that cultivate, defend, and radiate truth, goodness, and beauty. So we are going to be talking a lot about beauty practically and what makes a beautiful home. But one of our favorite quotations actually from Misty in our home also gets to the heart of one of the most important constituent parts of beauty in the home, which is something more foundational than the paint color, something more foundational than the decorating, more foundational than even the cute little kids running around. And it really is, how's mama doing?
Are you going to say organize your attitude?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I knew you'd
get... It's taking me a second.
You'd know exactly which one I was talking about there. Yes, organize your attitude. This is one of those key concepts that we've come at from lots of different angles in different episodes over the seasons here in Bright Hearth. But it's one of those topics that's so important for us not to forget.
Always worth coming back to.
Yeah, not to take for granted. Real quick, before we get into the meat of that, I did want to say we added a discount code for our conference just for Bright Hearth listeners, which I should have done right from the beginning, but I'm bad at marketing, so sue me. But we added the discount code BRIGHTHEARTH10, all caps, BRIGHTHEARTH10, put it in the description as well, and we'd love to have you guys join us June 6th to the 8th for our new Christendom Press conference, and it's going to be a Thursday evening through a Saturday afternoon. We'll have a great singles mixer that I'm really excited about. We've got a pretty even split between young men and women who signed up for that singles mixer, which is going to be held at our church.
We're doing a big park Sunday Sabbath
a big
feast,
park,
right?
Yes. Okay. We're going to be doing a big park celebration after church service on Sunday. We'd love to have everybody stay for church who can and join us for worship at Refuge. And then that Sunday afternoon, we're going to rent a park, city park, and just have a big party. So if you can stay through Sunday, even Sunday after church, hang around for that. But there will be a link to the conference info. Bright Hearth 10 will get you 10% off anything you do. I'll be doing a concert of psalms. We'll be singing a lot of corporate psalms and chanties and things together as well. But I will be putting on a very rare actual live performance of some of my original music and psalm settings. So we would just love to have you guys. We have a big venue this year. We can fit up to 1,000, I think maybe even a little bit more than that, people. So we've made it as affordable as we could for whole families to come. Kids like of most ages are free, and then we have a small fee for teenagers or something like that. But we'd love to have whole families come out for this and hang out with us. But on to the meat. Let's get to the meat, babe. Enough housekeeping. I know it's your favorite part, but we need to move on, okay?
Where were we?
We're talking about the mother's attitude as foundational to beauty in the home, which actually was your idea for the episode. So
yes.
Let's start here, babe. What would you say, what does it actually mean to, what's the phrase that Misty used in the quote, pleasant? What does it actually look like to have a pleasant, what are the constituent parts or what goes into having a good attitude and why is this so foundational to beauty in the home?
I mean, literally thinking of your tone of voice and the way you're responding to people, even it really is setting an atmosphere. You can say one thing two different ways, a good way and a bad way. I think pleasantness has to come back to being at ease with yourself and with the Lord. So having like joy in your salvation, knowing that you're forgiven, and then working out that in your relationships around you and in your home. So somebody that is constantly anxious or feels, you know, guilt tripped into trying to be a better mom or whatever, she's not really going to be a pleasant person to be around or a source of joy and beauty in the home. She's kind of going to just overflow with what's in her heart, which might be anxiety and bitterness or discontent or whatever. So I think that's part of why this has to be the first thing we talk about, is because you can get everything else externally right, but if you're filled with dead man's bones, it kind of doesn't matter. It ruins the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of some of the absolutely beautiful churches in America or cathedrals around the world that are stunning. I mean, beautiful cathedrals built over generations, beautiful churches, traditional classical architecture, just gorgeous. But then you go inside on a Sunday morning and you find lady pastors with rainbow tassels and drag queen story hour and all of these things. And that to me is like the picture of the beautiful home that has a wicked lady in the middle of it.
Yeah.
She's cleaned the outside of the cup.
Yes.
And she's thought, well, that was enough. I've worked very hard cleaning the outside of this cup. I've got it sparkling. Look how nice the outside of the cup looks. All my friends come over and they love the outside of the cup. But
yeah.
Jesus says the Pharisees were like, they were like men who cleaned the outside of the cup and called it good. And the inside had black mold. Like, and then everything they served basically was tainted by the filth in the cup. And so I do think this is one of those foundationally important, you know, foundation stones to put under your feet. When you're thinking about beauty in the home, it's like, how's mom? Is her attitude, are her words beautiful?
That's the first thing. If you feel like your house needs an overhaul, you need to start with your attitude first.
Yeah. Yeah. Which would make you, this is a good point, like which would make you happier, having a bathroom remodeled or having your attitude improve?
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yes.
Bathroom remodels are fine. We're going to get into like the beauty side and the practical.
Yeah,
and
changing all that, your attitude improves everything else that you're experiencing.
Yeah. So question for you. I have an idea of my instinct on this answer, but I'm curious what you think. Do you think it's a common problem for ladies to have an inaccurate assessment of how pleasant they are? And what I mean is, do you think it's common for ladies, let's say, you know, young, not just young kid years, but just in general, in their homes, towards their husband, children, friends, do you think it's common for women to overestimate how pleasant they are and maybe struggle with this and not realize that it's a problem for them to have this as an issue and for it to be a blind spot for them? Do you think that's common?
I don't know if it's common. I think it's a personality thing. I think maybe what's common is that they don't realize how much of a sway it has specifically. I'm of the persuasion that women know they're sinners. And I do think women fall into ruts and just automatically sin. I think we're aware of it though. I'm aware of it. For the most part, I know when I'm being a twerp.
Yeah, I agree.
So, but I don't know if they're aware of how much of a sway it really has. And maybe it's for lack of like seeing it in our generation, in our homes, maybe, I don't know. But
yeah.
And because it's hard to live against the flesh, I think it can be hard to believe if you have a better attitude about things, it can actually sway really towards your favor.
Are you tired of all the plastic toys that are cheaply made in China? How about the greenwashing that comes with wooden toys covered in harmful chemicals, yet claiming they're safe for littles because the FDA said so? Well, look no further. At Rooted Pines Homestead, husband and wife, along with their 5 young children, work together as a family economy to create handmade, natural wooden toys and goods that can be passed down to future generations in small batch organic and wildcrafted herbal remedies. From using locally sourced wood to coloring toys with real foods and plants, they deliver various types of wooden products that are coated with only 2 ingredients, local beeswax and organic expeller pressed coconut oil. Talk about food safe. Their family values include being good stewards, making sure that their products are the highest quality and not harmful to families, homes, or our environment. They also teach free herbalism on their YouTube channel for those wanting to take back what New Agers have tried to distort in worshiping creation rather than the Creator. Why support the big companies who knowingly use cheap, toxic ingredients because it's better on their pocket when you can get 10% off your order using code BRIGHTHEARTH10, that's all caps, BRIGHTHEARTH10, to support your brothers and sisters in Christ at Rooted Pines Homestead? Check out the show notes for more details and connect with them on social media.
Isn't it interesting, as you read the Old Covenant, to see the role that the fat of animals played in sacrifice? Today, some of this tallow is often discarded.
Through research and practice, our friends at Gray Toad Tallow have discovered an all-organic balm that is both moisturizing and healing, filled with vitamins A, D, E, and K. They've received testimony of its soothing and helpful results for psoriasis, eczema, dry skin, and sunburn.
Go to graytoadtallow.com and use discount code BRIGHT15, that's all caps, BRIGHT15, for 15% off your order. And all of that will be in the description.
But I just think it's hard to believe that because we're fighting a spiritual battle, you know?
Yeah, to believe that my sin is really causing as much damage as it actually is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it can be a blind spot, but I think much more common than it being something that a woman's you're telling me this for the first time. I'm unpleasant?
Yeah. No. Yeah.
I think much more common is that the blind spot is actually in the effect that it's having, mm-hmm. and how many of her real problems actually come back to this and not something someone else is doing.
Yeah.
So I think she can fail to realize that her unpleasant attitude is actually creating this whole ecosystem and world around her where it's actually giving a welcome mat to other people sinning, even sinning against her. So now her husband is withdrawn or mm-hmm. her children are fussy at her and her friends are distant. And I think what she can tend to underestimate is how powerfully her sin has actually shaped all of those reactions. So that people are actually, they're being trained by her sin to respond to her sinfully. Mm-hmm. And she can easily start going, well, I'm justified in my unpleasantness. Look at all these unpleasant people around me.
Yeah, it's like the chicken or the egg.
Exactly.
I mean, most people know it was really kind of started with her, but in her mind, it's a chicken or the egg.
Yeah, exactly. And the point is, most of the time, the point isn't even for us to litigate and figure out who sinned first. Most of the time, the point is for all of us to just go,
take responsibility.
I was first.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm the chicken. Or, yeah, the chicken was first because God made the chicken. It doesn't even matter if I'm the chicken or not. I'm going to go first in repenting. I'm going to be the chicken egg of repenting. I'm going to be the chicken. This metaphor is getting away from me. I think people are following, though. What we're saying.
Hopefully.
Yeah, they're following. So I do think that's a problem and that it's important for, we often talk like in the man world about men take responsibility. Fathers, how's family worship? Dads, how's your wife doing? Like, how are the kids doing? Are you praying before bed? Are you leading in singing? Are you being joyful in your home? Are you laying your life down? Like, come on, men, you got to take responsibility. And sometimes, I think this is what one of the things you were getting at, is that that same message can be a little bit of a low note in the message to women.
Yeah, yeah, because, I mean, the dad can be doing as much as, like, the dad can be obeying 100%, but he can't force his wife to change if she's a grumpy person.
Right.
And she, because the family is home-oriented, the family doesn't exist most of the time at McDonald's or at Walmart or at church.
Yeah.
The anchor is the home. That's what she's curating for the benefit of the people. It's going to suck, even if he's doing what he can be doing.
Right.
So yes, we do have to be calling other women to be responsible as well.
Yeah. I think sometimes the dynamic that can crop up in homes is that the husband is constantly having to work really hard to cheer his wife up.
Yes.
Win her and woo her and pull her up and get her to smile and make a joke. And she's constantly grumping at him, but he like has figured out how to work the economy to like, he's walking in the door and he's like, I can smell it.
It's like what Michael says about the wife not being the mission.
Yes. And then he can start to go, okay, I know what to do. I'll go do the dishes. Really quick. Like I'll give her back rub.
A joke. And, so yucky.
She'll get her attitude will improve and it'll be more pleasant. And men should work hard. And if their wife is having a bad day, like they should.
Yeah.
But the dynamic really ought to be where he comes home and she has prepared a pleasant, beautiful home for him and for the children and for herself, starting with having a pleasant, cheerful attitude, the kind of attitude that would be nice to come home to.
We're not ideologues.
Right, absolutely. Because that's the first thing people will think.
They'll be like, we have had six children.
Well, what about the, and people immediately start coming up with elaborate scenarios. They're like, yeah, well, what about the mom and she's got terrible postpartum depression and her husband works in the oil fields and he comes home after 6 weeks gone and he just slings mud all over the floor and then he says, babe, where's my chicken nuggets and sexual encounter?
Okay.
And you're like, yes, that is exactly what we're saying, guys. That was the point
so
we were trying to make.
I remember.
Of course not.
Reading Tish Oxenrider's book. I do not remember what it's called. And she's a
what
liberal
did you say?
Now.
What name?
Tish.
Tishock?
Tish. T-S-H.
Tsh. Her name is Tsh.
Yes.
Tsh.
Like, what is it called?
It
Shoot.
Sounds
I'll
like
have
a,
to look it up.
It sounds like an ethnic name.
But it was basically like a book that was supposed to help you write your family mission statement. Remember, you used to use it for premarital.
I do not ever recall using
okay.
That sounds
Anyways.
Like something kind of gay.
No.
But,
well, I mean, I found it super helpful. At the time, I'd be curious to go. Let me look it up. Oxenrider books. Da 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 da. Organized simplicity.
Okay.
So, I think we had two kids in a very small house.
Yeah.
And I remember like going through this and working on the family mission statement, and talking to you about it, and we were having a conversation, and you just reminded me like, the mission of the home is to raise happy, joyful Christians.
Yeah.
So, and it was the first time as a young, I was probably like 22.
Uh-huh.
I was like, wait a second. So you don't care if the floors are picked up when you get home. And you were like, no, if you're cheerful and they're happy and everyone loves the Lord, we're good.
Yeah. We'll pick the floors up like cheerfully after that.
Yes.
It'll be great.
And that was a huge, like, okay, like a weight off of, I can still pursue tidying my home, being organized and beautifying my home. But at the end of the day, mom and dad are on the same page about that's not the ultimate.
Yeah.
Because you just wanted happy, joyful Christians.
Yeah. I just want, like, just speaking as a man, putting pastor hat and all the things off, what does Brian Sauvay want when I walk in the door? I want my wife to look at me and be like, dang, I'm so happy that he's here. And wow, he's so handsome. No, but just I want her to be like, oh, welcome home.
Yeah.
This is your place.
Pleasant.
I'm so glad that you're here.
Homemaker.
Let's talk about some practical constituent parts here of pleasantness. So okay. You've talked about pleasant speech. What's pleasant? What does it mean to speak pleasantly? What does it mean to speak unpleasantly? I know this is obvious, but like I think some people do. They fail to like actually recognize that if they were to label the way they were talking regularly,
yeah.
They would go, wait, that's actually, I'm being unpleasant.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Instagram or Twitter. It was like over a year ago too that I found some like Southern Christian gals YouTube channel. In the context I found it in was a bunch of feminists making fun of her. And they were saying, oh, look at her trying to teach ladies how to speak femininely. And I was like, oh, interesting. What is this about? So I went and I watched it. And I actually thought, I know a lot of ladies that this would be really good for.
It was actually helpful.
Yeah, it was very helpful. Like she just gave different examples of how you could say one way with a certain intonation in your voice, one way that was accusatory. Your husband would take it two different ways.
Uh-huh.
And I just don't think people think about, again, it's like gut reaction. If you grew up in a highly sinful, toxic, dysfunctional home, that might, sarcasm might be your only response.
Yep.
So you literally have to work a new muscle of, and this is something I've had to tell myself is like, well, Lexi, being a grumpy head doesn't work. So let's try something
let's
else.
Let's try something
and it's
different.
It's not, I do, you talked about this somewhere recently, fake it till you make it.
Yeah,
I
was just about to bring that up from a sermon.
Yeah, that was a really good sermon, by the way.
Thanks, babe.
What was it? The end of the household's blueprints?
Yeah, it was the very last blueprints.
Okay. It was very good. Sermon. You guys should all go listen to it. But I have had to realize like what I'm doing in certain times, the way I'm communicating isn't working. Why not just try being overly cheerful, even if you don't feel that way? Or for me, some of it is like I get in my head about, well, it's a really big sin and they shouldn't be acting that way. And so I have to get out my, you've been naughty voice instead of just being like handling it, but handling it cheerfully.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been doing.
With like children.
Seeing great improvement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. With children is what you're describing.
Yeah. With children.
There.
They're because they,
she really, wasn't talking about me.
No,
like
no,
you and
no,
I being
you.
Really naughty and no. She needs to pull out her, you've
no,
been
no,
naughty,
no.
But I'm going to be really
no,
pleasant.
No, I'm just thinking
it.
I'm spending most of the time in the home with the
yeah,
kids.
Right.
So they really do, like think about the way God made their brains with their mirror neurons. If you're being harsh to them, God created them to mimic you for better or for worse.
Yeah.
They're going to be harsh back to you. So if you can handle a disruption literally with a pleasant tone of voice, I mean, think of Michelle Duggar, guys. I used to think Michelle Duggar was so silly with her voice, but now I'm like, that's like the goal is to be able to have a pleasant tone of voice when you are interrupted. Because that's what having an organized attitude is about, is being able to be, to accept what you're dealing with from the hand of the Lord and to do it cheerfully. So who's ever, maybe it's your grandma. Maybe your grandma had a really like gracious, kind disposition.
Yeah.
Think about that. And I think it's a good thing for ladies to work towards that.
Yeah.
I only say Michelle Duggar because everyone knows who I'm talking about when I say that.
Yeah, we're not trying to weigh in on like the Duggar controversies.
No, y'all don't know my Southern grandma though, so I can't.
Exactly, that's not a very helpful analogy.
Oh, I didn't even think of the controversies. Yeah, yeah, no, didn't mean it like that.
No, no, not a blanket endorsement, but it is a great point about the attitude because when you think about so, what is God a godly femininity generally do? One of the things that it does is it adorns. It's a crown, the Proverbs say. Instead of a rottenness in the bones, it's like a crown, a good wife. She's a glory. She adorns the home. And so when you're thinking about beauty, this is why before we get into the practicals of beauty, you really have to understand the soul of beauty, which is cheerful obedience to your vocation in the Lord. When he says to the woman, be a keeper at home, you say, yes, Lord, I'm going to do that cheerfully. I'm going to do that with zeal, and I'm going to put my back into being a feminine glory. So think about like, what is it? I like that you talked about feminine communication versus...
Yeah, I'm looking up a verse right now.
Even just like when you think about some of the way our culture values authenticity, where it's like, well, I don't feel like being joyful right now. And so it would really be hypocritical of me to pretend to be joyful right now. And so therefore, I'm going to give myself an excuse to be really dour and sour and grumpy because I want to be authentic. I don't want to be a hypocrite. What you're doing is you're misunderstanding what a hypocrite is, and you're misunderstanding what the Lord's commanding. Because you have to remember, the Lord commands us to rejoice, like to be joyful. Mm-hmm. This is what Paul literally says. We it's not an interpretation. That's what he says. So what we need to understand is that obedience sometimes does bubble out of the soul from a deep desire where every part of your being is aligned and your heart and your soul and your mind and your strength are all aligned. And with all your might, you say yes to what God wants you to do. But some of the time, because we're sinners and we have the flesh, we have to actually, we have one part of me is like not that interested in obeying. And it actually wants to, it said, upon further consideration, I have decided to become worse. And what I want to do is I want to throw a pity party. Okay, but what did the Lord say to do? He said to love your husband, respect your husband. He said to love your children. He said to die to yourself. He said, and this goes for men and women. And so sometimes what you have to do, and I made this distinction in the sermon, you can go listen to this a little bit longer explanation, but there's a bad LARPing, which is hypocrisy, where you're pretending to be something that deep down you absolutely are not.
You're pretending specifically for the praise of other people.
Yes. The inside of the cup is filthy, but you have polished the outside to a mirror shine, and you don't care about that. You don't give a rip about the inside. Okay. But there is a kind of LARPing that you all have to do some of the time. And it's the LARPing where you're saying, okay, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. As for me today, right now, I'm going to say to my heart, you are not in charge. I'm not going to throw a pity party. Instead, we're going to go be pleasant to people in the house. And we're going to have a beautiful, feminine, glorious attitude, or for the man, a joyful, cheerful, vigorous, masculine leading attitude. And we are going to do that and ask the Lord to change the way we feel about it.
Yes.
So that all the loves line up and it's all good. But the heart is, you say it all the time, the heart is a terrible leader. It does, though, take orders if you will go first with your will. So sometimes you do have to say, right now, my husband's walking in the door, or you know what I'm going to do? I don't feel like it completely. I'm going to smile and I'm going to say, hey, babe, good to see you. How was your day?
Yeah, I think that's where the holy resolve really comes from, because you're in your heart deciding to fake it.
Yep.
Because you love the other people. You're not, and it doesn't have to do with, I'm showing off for these people.
Right.
That's what the hypocrite is doing. They only want to do it because they want to be acknowledged by somebody else. But the person that's faking it for the sake of other people doesn't really even care if other people notice it.
That's right.
They want to be at peace with the Lord, and it's an integrity sort of a thing. It's an inner sort of a...
Yes. And if you ask yourself as a Christian, even when you're having a bad day, a grumpy day, Lord, what is my deepest desire? Mm-hmm. If I could snap my fingers and have my deepest desire, it would be to be at peace with my husband,
yeah,
with my children. It would be to have a pleasant and good attitude.
Yeah.
It would be to glorify God and denying myself and loving. Like, as a Christian, the deepest desires of your new heart really are for righteousness. What? And so sometimes don't get hung up in the LARPing thing and the hypocrite thing where you're like, am I just pretending? Well, say, what is my deepest desire? Because there's a less deep desire, the fleshly desire, that's at war. But as a Christian, the deeper and more real desire really is for righteousness. And so crucifying the flesh looks like saying, I'm not going to obey that ephemeral desire. I'm actually going to obey the deeper desire and live at peace with the deeper desire, even if my fizzy emotions at the top of the surface aren't cooperating fully right now.
What's that verse about how good it is when brothers dwell in unity? It's a psalm, I think.
Oh, it's, behold how pleasant and how good and how becoming well when brothers dwell together, come in unity to dwell.
Yeah.
It's Psalm 131. I can sing it, but
well,
I think it's Psalm 131.
That's what it reminds me of, is somebody's most... Because if you think about it, if you get all the wicked desires of your heart, if you gain the whole world, but you lose your family, you lose the heart of your children, you lose your husband, you lose a joyful environment, does it really matter that you got everything else your yucky heart wanted?
Okay, so let's talk about some common attitude problems. What are just some garden variety sins of the attitude that ladies need to say, I want a beautiful kitchen, I want a beautiful house, I want beautiful bathrooms, I want beautiful art on the walls, but I don't have a beautiful attitude because of this.
I think you're in big pot of hot water danger if you are willing to argue with your family members in front of other people. That is one that if you're doing that regularly and it's like no big deal to you that you've mouthed off at your husband at a church event or something, you should probably go get some counseling.
Canary in the coal mine.
Yeah, that's a pretty big tip off to me that there's a lot more going on, because if you're willing to do that in front of people, it's probably a lot worse at home. So just something to be aware of. Yeah, obviously disrespectfulness, insisting upon like being right in a silly, trivial thing, or maybe even not a trivial thing, that you're just being so rude and obnoxious about it. Obnoxiousness in general.
Uh-huh.
Insisting on having the last word.
Yep.
That's a pretty big one that is not good. Tis not good.
I was talking with a single lady. This is going to sound bad. I was talking with a single lady the other day, but it was in the course of appropriate ministry context with a deacon by my side. And it was a conversation I was supposed to be having. And we were just talking about what is like the challenges of Christian dating and how to try to find a godly husband and on the men's side, like how difficult it is in both directions, really. And so we got talking. I can't remember if she asked or if we just said, well, you know, what's interesting is both sides kind of have this checklist process where they're trying to kind of test the other party and figure out, is this a person I could see myself being married to? And the test is different for a man and a woman. Like, what are the tests? What are they thinking of? And one of them that it was Ben and I, Ben, deacon in my parish, helps me out with a lot of stuff. And we were talking about, okay, because she said, well, what is the men's side? And I said, well, one of the things is like if a woman constantly interrupts him, that's really, men tend to really not like, it's disrespectful. It's an unpleasant, like if you're constantly bowling over your husband and interrupting him, he's mid-sentence and he's like, blah, blah, jumping in. That's really bad. That's very unpleasant. I think too, that can happen sometimes with ladies, if you're really quick, like if you're Elizabeth in Pride and Prejudice, she's got a quick wit. And your husband's less, he's not as verbal. Sometimes it can be tempting for a wife to like constantly finish her husband's sentences and interrupt him. Like, that's always been unpleasant to me. I don't know if that's actually related to this topic so much, but it just came to mind.
Yeah, sure. It's a way to communicate unpleasantly.
Yeah. Even if it's like not meant rudely.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
What are some other garden variety unpleasantnesses? If that's a word.
The two things I had thought of was an atmosphere can quickly be ruined with lack of forgiveness.
Yep.
And being unwilling to keep short accounts. So just keeping a record of wrongs, really communicating with others about the record of wrongs you're mentally keeping. You know, they've done something new, and so you bring up the past again and again and again and again. And that is unpleasant.
Unpleasant. Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. Absolutely the case. So, like, if it's basically 1 Corinthians 13. Mm-hmm. That love is patient, it's kind, it doesn't envy, it doesn't boast, it isn't proud, it isn't rude, it isn't self-seeking, it's not easily angered, it doesn't keep a record of wrongs, it doesn't delight in evil, it rejoices in the truth. All of those different aspects. Those are pleasant. Love, Christian love is pleasant.
Yeah.
That's what makes an attitude.
Yeah.
Which is why when we're talking about this, immediately people want to overlay over it like a Stepford Wives vibe. Stepford Wife vibe. They're like, you're just looking for this plastic perfection, fake smile. It's like, no. You don't understand. Pleasantness of attitude is actually an issue of core obedience to God's yeah. law. Because love is the summation of God's law, loving your neighbor and loving the Lord. So if you don't love, you're not fulfilling the law at all. You're violating the very heart of the law. And what does love look like? Well, that list in 1 Corinthians is a good place to start.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty dang pleasant.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, it's so discouraging to hear that. Even like kids sitting still in church, like, well, I'd rather it be super rowdy than, you know, who knows how that mom's getting those kids to sit still. What's she doing at home to them? And it's just discouraging because it's as if God can't actually mature people and change people and train people in godliness. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So yeah, don't. Like, it is actually possible for some women to have it together. It just is. And I think, I don't know where you were talking about this recently, but like, don't envy your sister who might be the one that in your mind, you're tempted to call her the Stepford wife. Because there just might be a different type of grace that God has given her that she is pulling it together in a way, or it could be the season she's in,
yeah.
or it could just be the disposition of her children. Like, do not give other ladies the side eye because, you know, you're over here feeling bad about yourself and they seem to have it together or something.
Yeah. We tend to glory in the low.
Yeah.
Like, we tend to glory in the, just sit, you know, Jesus, he just wants to come. He wants to sit with you in your trial. And he just wants to sit with you, mama.
Once again, in your mud puddle.
In that mud puddle you're sitting in. And the thing is, like, of course, the Lord will come all the way down to your mud puddle.
Mm-hmm.
And he will meet you there. But his purpose there isn't to just be like, well, this was a good visit to your mud puddle, same time tomorrow. His purpose
it's
is
actually
like,
to move you out of it.
Can you come in the house? Like, would you like to come in the house? Do you want to stop being in the mud puddle and just come in the house? And
yeah, and like, usually it just means letting our sin go, confessing yeah. and repenting, confessing and getting and repenting. Into fellowship with others.
Here at Brightheart, we're all about helping you not turn into a girl if you're a boy, or into a boy if you're a girl. You know what might be doing that to you? The soap in your shower. And so we are pleased to introduce you to Indigo Sundry Soap. com, link in the description, of course, who can provide you with soaps and more without any of the nasty stuff. And because they love you, they're giving you a discount code, guys. So use code all caps BrightHearth for 10% off your whole order. Support this great Christian company and support BrightHearth Podcast at the same time. Check them out at IndigoSundrySoap.com. And of course, that link is in the description. Do you desire to be shrewd financially for your family? It takes wisdom and dedication to build and pass on personal wealth, as mature, responsible leaders must.
Joe Garrisey with Backwards Planning Financial is at your side to integrate investments, debt, insurance, tax strategies, and legacy planning in a holistic approach.
He coaches his clients to act wisely with the resources God expects us to turn a profit on, to love our children and grandchildren well.
Tap on the link to his website in the description and contact him to get started.
Or visit him directly at backwardsplanningfinancial.com.
This gets to some tweets of yours that I wanted to read. I feel like Eric right now because he's always on the King's Hall saying, I want to read this tweet everybody hated, Brian, and could you respond to it? But you had a couple tweets. Twitter basically completely suppresses you from ever showing up to anybody. So these were rare tweets where...
Why? Why am I flagged? We still can't figure it out.
You can literally search Lexi's handle. It's at... Lexy underscore Sauve. It will not show up in the search. She's search banned. She's a very subversive thought leader. So it's pretty funny. All your media's tagged as sensitive, like if you're...
People are like, what is this? Why is it so sensitive? I'm like, I don't know.
What makes me mad is like...
Domesticity defies demons. I've said this many times.
Boom. But all of the catty feminazi ladies found some of her tweets. And mainly what they tend to do is they read Lexi's tweets and then they assume that she's signaling about how evil I am. and how I abuse Lexi. So anyway, but these tweets got to some of what we're talking about. You said on the first one, if you regularly, more than twice a year, quote, need to have a conversation with your spouse about something that's bothering you, you're probably being too fastidious and need to work on overlooking many things. What are you getting at there? Because I think it cuts to the heart of what we're talking about.
Well, I think women are really bad at knowing where is a hill to die on, especially when we have a monthly cycle.
I didn't say it, guys.
That makes us hyper introspective every few days. It's just something you have to be aware of. Like, you might feel really angsty about one thing today, and then literally in 12 hours, it's not going to be a big deal. But unfortunately, you acted when you were feeling angsty, and now you've blown up your marriage again.
Yeah.
So I just think my thought behind that was, I feel like I have a pretty great marriage. I rarely have to have those conversations. Maybe other women need to hear how few times they actually have to have those conversations. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's where I was coming from when saying that, because sometimes it can be, you know, I could be counseling someone where it's like every other week, it sounds like the wife specifically is initiating a huge conversation with her husband
about some big thing that she wants changed.
Yes. And in my mind, I'm like, well, shoot, does he ever get a break? Do you guys ever just enjoy one another? Or is your communication crisis mode 100%?
Yeah. And sometimes women have a model in their head. This can go, men can do this too. But sometimes they have a model in their head for what like platonic ideal husband would be and do. Okay. He would like be interested in all the literature I'm interested in. He would constantly be reading the systematic theologies, and he would be just, you know, in advanced, he would have the equivalent of like a master's in theology and all these other things. And then your actual husband, he works hard at his job. He loves his kids. And at night he wants to watch, Ice Road Truckers, like an episode of Ice Road Truckers, and then go to sleep like a couple times a week. And there's a huge temptation there because the wife's thinking like, what I really want is a classically educated Latin scholar who will sweep me off my feet and lead me theologically. And what she doesn't mean by that is be a decent, good husband, be a good chap.
Yeah.
Who prays with the kids and, you know, leads well, takes them to church, all this stuff. What she means is like, he must be an MDiv pastor.
Yes.
And she has this model.
That's always what the women.
She's trying to like get him to this place. And she thinks that the Lord has appointed her as like his headmistress.
Holy Spirit, yeah.
To get him there. And so she's like constantly looking at him like he's like, I think I want to watch some Ice Road Truckers. And and she's like clearly disappointed in him.
Yeah.
And like, you know, Susan's husband was reading Herman Bavinck tonight, and I thought maybe you might want to read Herman Bavinck. And he's like, you know what? That sounds good tonight. I would really like to watch Ice Road Truckers. And like what I'm talking about is contentment and not making your husband a project.
Let me tell you something else too, guys. The only conversations I can think of in the last year that I've had to have with you, it ultimately wasn't about you. It was ultimately about I needed to talk, so I stopped sinning in my heart over it.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's another thing is if you're going to have a conversation, ladies, you have to get to a place where you know, whether you say it or not, you know if you're trying to attack him. Like I said before,
yeah,
you know you sin, and you know what your intention is going into those conversations.
Yeah.
So for me, it's usually I'm only going to have a conversation with you because I need clarity on something so I don't keep sinning in my head against you. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not even, I'm not even ultimately having it necessarily to change an outcome. It's that I know I need to be in fellowship with you and in with the Lord ultimately.
Yeah.
And so that conversation has to take place now because Lexi wants to, but because I know it's causing lack of fellowship between me and the Lord or you and me.
Yeah, like, hey, honey.
Again, it's me taking responsibility.
Yeah, this thing has been really bothering me for some time. Talk me through it. Help me understand. Yes. Is this something I just need to get over?
Yes.
Is this something that is just I'm missing something. And a lot of the time it's like, no, that's a good point. I think that's a good observation. Yeah, I need to adjust. I need to not do the thing that's bothering you. But not every time.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I know about you is that if I do say, well, no, I know that's bothering you. That thing is difficult. But I do think I actually need to do that thing. And it's a cost. Like, let's take work hours or something like that. We haven't actually talked about this. So I'm picking something that's just generic. But let's say that I'm like, hey, I really need to do this thing at work the next. I've got company goals at my business or something like that that we've really got to hit. This is important for our family. And so I'm going to be home at 6 instead of 5, a couple nights a week, or 6:30 instead of 5. And I understand dinner, all this stuff's really important, but I got to do it. And a year, like 6 months, a year, it's like, that's bothering me. Some of the time he might say, you're right. That was supposed to be temporary. I need to rein that back. Mm-hmm. And I let that get away from me. And she was respectful and it was helpful and they're in fellowship. And then sometimes he says, well, no, remember we talked about this. This is really important. Gives her the vision again. And then this is where submission is really important. It's when she's still like, I wish that wasn't the answer that he just gave me. Now, am I going to give myself permission to be unpleasant, to be around, to punish him?
That's
for giving
not
me the
being
answer.
Submissive is what you're saying.
It's not being submissive.
Okay. Just so we're clear, ladies.
Ladies, that's not being submissive. So that's good. You weren't saying, like, you're talking about normative circumstances in this tweet, from what
yes.
I understand. Not like what 90% of women, not the 3% or 2% edge cases where someone immediately says, what he's physically abusing her and he's also a drug lord and he has a Bengal tiger in their bedroom.
My point in those extreme situations is if you're having to communicate through extreme things like that, you need someone else helping you.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be you anymore.
Yeah. That's where you need, okay, I'm working on a gentle and quiet spirit and a pastor's helping him, or there's other people getting involved in the conversation and untangling things and understanding that's going
to
take
ladies,
time.
Please quit lying to yourself too. Like, let's just say this. There are times I've been talking to people where I say, did your husband really do or say that?
Uh-huh, yeah.
If so, I'm hanging up now. I'm calling the elders and the police. And you guys, there's so many times where the women are like, nope, didn't actually happen. And it's like, okay.
And what they meant was, I felt this.
Yes. And it's, you have to understand, especially in ministry, we have obligations to get you the right help. Because we love you guys.
Yeah.
So you need to think, even when you're telling yourself a story, maybe you're not talking to someone else. Are you telling a lie? Are you blowing this out of proportion to make your husband look worse?
Are you conveying the tone of voice that he used accurately?
Yeah.
Are you saying like, and then he came up to me and he said, you shut your mouth. And what he really said was, honey, I think you need to calm down.
Yeah.
Okay. Like those are two completely different things. And then a lot of, you know, some of the time you have a situation where this is why Proverbs 18 exists, because you hear one side, you think, wow, this is terrible. Like I need to go punch this guy, or like, wow, that woman needs to be locked up. Like they need to be institutionalized. And you hear one side and then you go, okay, I'm going to call the other side. I'm going to talk to the other side. And it's like, well, yeah, you know, I did sin and she also cussed me out. And then it's like, well, you know, what's crazy. She left the part out where she cussed him out. It's crazy, like how we do this. We tell the story,
and we're not
to privilege ourselves.
We're not saying this to laugh at people, but it's really to make you, the listener, aware, so you stop making yourself miserable.
Yeah, because that's what you're doing. You're allowing yourself to be the victim.
Yeah,
who is not responsible for anything because I am the white hat and they're wearing the black hat, and there are situations where one spouse is grievously sinning. And even to the point where authorities need to get involved in all that. We're talking about the 90% of the time when it's just normal, ordinary life in marriage. Last tweet, you said this and everybody freaked out again.
I must not have seen this. My life is so pleasant when I have you to monitor my Twitter for me.
Here's why. Husband's life hack. I have a notification turned on for any time Lexi tweets. And I can't always go look right away. But and we have the same vision for social media. I'm not worried about her going wild and on the TL or something. But
it took me a super duper long time to understand what TL was. But
the timeline, yeah. So I also have her login, so I can just go on her Twitter and monitor. And usually what I use that for, like, I'm not deleting Lexi's tweets or something, anything like that. Usually what I'm doing is I'll go on and when people are being mean to her, I just immediately block them for her.
I don't
know
how.
She doesn't even see them because she hardly checks her notifications. And she probably doesn't know how to block people.
No.
So I'll go on there. I blocked probably 15 people today.
Yeah, really?
From these tweets. Oh, at least.
Seriously?
Most of them were accounts I was like, oh, I remember blocking that account.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Because
there are people who, there's a couple accounts that, like, they make it their, they're basically their hobby is to lie about people online. So there's one of them that's convinced, literally convinced people to the point where I've, like, had people in passing. I've seen people in passing. You know, someone will say, like, I like Brian Sauvé's music. And then someone will reply who I don't even know who they are. They'll be like, yeah, you know, I kind of like his music, but, you know, like, he doesn't even provide health, like, health care for his wife. because there's these people out there who have, like, taken screenshots of old tweets from Lexi talking about how the Lord always provided for us, even when we were, you know, and we use Samaritan, we don't have health insurance. So there have been times where it's like, oh, we had a big bill from a, and Lexi's testimony is like, the Lord always provided. And they take that and they're like, see,
oh my,
Brian doesn't provide health care for his wife. So I blocked a bunch of those
people.
Anyways,
thank you for doing that, babe.
I got your back. But this was your tweet. You said, if you're just learning to communicate respectfully to your husband, it's a good practice to write things down and rehearse several times exact things you want to say so you don't freak out and cry or start a needless fight. What were you getting at?
Well, I was again thinking, I have a great marriage. Maybe most people don't realize how much time I spend. If I'm going to have one of those big conversations with you, it's not going to be a spur of the moment thing. I'm going to spend a day or two praying, thinking, and writing it out. Maybe other people need to hear that who don't have good marriages, because they're always doing fly by the seat of their pants. And unfortunately, the heart is deceitful.
Yeah.
And that doesn't usually work to do that. Yeah. So that was where I was getting at. It was like, this works really well for us. Maybe it would work for those of you who it's not working for what you're doing right now.
Yeah. Let me reread your tweet.
Okay.
How these people online are interpreting it. So they'll read, if you're just learning how to kowtow to your hyper-patriarchal Rudy Pants husband, it's a good practice to write things down so you can suppress all your true feelings and try to figure out just the right way so you don't set him off and he doesn't start beating you again.
Okay, so first of all,
that's how they're
reading. I have zero problem telling you how I actually feel about things, right?
Yeah, no, not at all.
I don't ever feel like I have to suppress how I feel to you.
No.
I'm writing it out to make sure I'm keeping myself accountable to, like, if I'm going to tell him this is how I'm feeling, I better not be trying to manipulate him.
Uh-huh.
Again, it's me taking responsibility, but I'm also trying to communicate effectively. Is that like a sin nowadays?
No, it's not. I think it's pretty good advice.
Because if the thing is, you guys, ladies, sometimes you just want to cause a flippin' fight. You can't do that. You have to actually want to resolve something. The only time I'm going to bring it up with Brian is if I need to resolve it, not because I want to cause a fight. So if you just want the instant gratification of, I caused a fight, I want to, you know, poke him in the eye, see if he still loves me at 9 p.m., sort of a thing.
Lexi picked 9 p.m. because to her, that's a very late hour.
By the way, it is approaching.
Is it really?
It's approaching.
Wow.
So,
we need to wrap it up.
I'm just saying that you need to be honest with what your motivation is in talking about it. And sometimes writing it out helps clarify that. Also, I do write. It's something I do. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's good for other people to practice too, though. Probably even more so. If you're not a good communicator, you probably need to do this even more so.
Yes. Yes. Amen. Well, I was going to say, if you have anything else, let me know, but we're out of time. So we're going to call it here, and hope you guys got some help out of this episode talking about beautiful attitudes, not just beautiful homes. Where true beauty starts is the inward beauty. This is what scriptures are getting at when it commends the woman's inward beauty, her gentle and quiet spirit. It's a pleasantness that crowns and adorns her home that comes out of a deep security in her faith and what the Lord has called her to, and in a trust in the Lord to, if she obeys the Lord, then the Lord is going to provide for her. It's overflows in the home. It's not being a doormat. It's actually being a crown. And so thanks for listening to this episode of Bright Hearth. Again, we'd love to see you guys in June at our New Christendom Press conference. We'd love to meet you, say hi, and just have a great time of fellowship together, singing and enjoying each other's company in Ogden, Utah. But until next time, Lord bless you and keep you, and we'll see you on Bright Hearth.